Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 18th day of June, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and it's another one of those days where much of the news is the kind of stuff we need to open the hood on and look underneath to see what's really driving the car. But let's start here, for reasons that hopefully will be obvious. President Trump says the summary of an ABC News appearance with George Stephanopoulos says he knows who was really behind the September 11th, 2001 attacks, saying that, quote, Iraq did not knock down the World Trade Center. It were other people. And he said, I think I know who the other people were. And you might also, unquote. Well, folks, indeed we might. But I'm increasingly suspicious that while Trump might have known at one point and been willing to talk about it, I'm no longer so sure on that score. The president also said that just next week, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, will begin mass deportations, you heard that right, of illegal immigrants. Here's the tweet. Next week, ICE will begin the process of removing the millions of illegal aliens who have illicitly found their way into the United States. Tweeted the president on Monday night saying, quote, they will be removed as fast as they come in, unquote. And that is going to be quite a show, folks. Although, arguably, much of what they'd have to do consists of just sending the buses and planes the other direction. By the way, it's about time, because even another Democrat mayor of a Texas town on the border, Bruno Lozano in Del Rio, has slammed the Fed gov and so-called lawmakers, saying, quote, we're sick and tired of the Fed's deaf ears when it comes to fixing the illegal immigration problem. We're frustrated, he said, extremely frustrated. But just in time to distract from all that, it looks like war on Iran is more likely than ever. President Donald Trump, say a number of sources, is sending 1,000 additional U.S. troops to the Middle East, as several U.N. officials have told the Hebrew language newspaper Ma'ariv that the U.S., quote, plans to carry out a tactical assault on Iran in response to that tanker attack in the Persian Gulf on Thursday. Some sources claim those forces are all part of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. Maybe some force protection units. But the Jerusalem Post is saying UN officials tell them that the U.S. is planning a tactical assault in Iran. And according to a Western diplomat, quote, the bombing will be massive, but will be limited to a specific target, unquote. The man who some Americans think is commander-in-chief wasn't enthusiastic, say reports, about the military move, but he lost his patience on the matter and got worn down by the neocons, essentially giving Mike Pompeo carte blanche to do what he wants anyway. And if the attack succeeds in kicking off a broader war, the president's hands will be tied thereafter anyway. Next, we shift gears to economics, first via this report from the 5-Minute Forecast, and as it turns out, a pretty prescient group of folks. They wrote yesterday about a handful of new economic numbers that arrived yesterday. First up, they say, is the Federal Reserve's Empire State Manufacturing Index from New York, a survey of factory managers. If the number's above zero, there's a growing factory sector, but below zero points to a shrinkage. Since 2016 and the election, the number's been consistently above zero. Last month, it was a solid 17.8. And before this month's number came out, dozens of economists polled by EconoDay were expecting a pullback, perhaps as far as 10, but still solidly above the zero line. The most pessimistic guess was 7, also suggesting at least some remaining growth. And they write there was nothing that could possibly suggest any sort of holy. All right, well, that makes the point. The number they write collapsed to minus 8.6, and it's the steepest one-month drop in a data series going all the way back to 2001. And furthermore, the internals of the survey, too, were uniformly lousy. New orders falling like a stone, while supplier costs are rising sharply, and, of course, it's getting harder to pass those costs along to the customers. Is it the tariffs, or is it the inevitable meltdown after a 10-year so-called expansion? Alas, they say, the survey doesn't offer a clear answer there. The second number from the National Association of Home Builders and their monthly market index of sentiment wasn't necessarily a shock, but was certainly a disappointment. It rang in at 64, still solidly growth territory, but less than the expert consensus was looking for. All of which points to the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee meeting on Mount Olympus tomorrow. This is one of their every 6 weeks meetings, but four times a year, the committee members issue their projections for the economy, pointing to what the Fed, at least, and they're usually wrong, thinks the future and their policy might be. And even though, they write, the Fed's taken a dovish turn all year amid plenty of presidential browbeating, the likelihood of a rate cut is still considered slim. This morning, futures traders are pricing in an 81% probability that the Fed will stand pat and hold off rate cuts until the end of July. Says Jim Rickards, though, look for the end of quantitative tightening as the Fed begins to prep markets for what's coming and the dropping of their word patient. Another code word meaning that eventually they really are going to cut. But if they jump the gun and do it now, says the 5-minute forecast, they run the risk of looking like they panicked. And that would likewise panic the stock market, which of course is absolutely a non-starter. I'll follow that up with a quick headline and a related story. This one from Zero Hedge about how global bond yields are crashing, they say. Between Draghi's promises it begins Trump's threats and the stock market's pressure on Powell, global bond yields are collapsing this morning. Starting with U.S. Treasury's 10-year yields have crashed to a 2.01% handle, the lowest since November 2016 and Trump's election. And they follow that up with 10-year German Bund yields, which plunged 32 basis points to a record low, as well as Austrian and Swedish bonds, which have both fallen below zero for the first time. Oh yeah, and then there's this, they note. The global dollar volume of negative yielding bonds has been rising steadily and has now touched at least the peak that it hit back in December of 2015. Which brings me to a couple interesting comments and a few charts that I actually can't show you from Miss Shedlock, who says that the strength of inversions, and he's talking about that yield curve, widened today. That's a strong recession warning, but it's not the actual recession signal. The key, he notes, after looking at a bunch of charts to make the point, some of them to point out similarities from 2007, is a sudden steepening of the yield curve following an inversion. And the trigger for that, he suspects, will be the Fed, which will either cut or signal that it's about to cut. Whereupon he harkens back to August 17th when the Fed cut the discount rate by 50 basis points, calling that too late, and then does a flashback to the Fed minutes from September the 18th of 2007. And remember what happened not too long after that. And he cites a number of what he calls amazingly wrong points from their statements back then, including a few gems like the following. The committee reiterated its view that the economy seemed likely to continue to expand at a moderate pace over coming quarters, supported by solid growth in employment and incomes and a robust global economy. Concluding that if you think the Fed has a handle on stopping the next recession, think again. Because just as in 2007, he says, they won't even see it coming, nor would they admit it if they did. The Fed, he said, has blown another magnificent bubble, and the next recession is already baked into the cake. So watch for a sudden steepening of spreads, and don't expect a long warning period, and don't pay attention to the Fed or President Trump yapping about the strong economy when it happens. Alright, well, after all of that, what is the other big, at least so far as the talking heads are concerned, economic news for the day? Well, it comes from Big Brother, Big Tech, and the public-private partnership that wants to control not only all of your online interactions, but, well, all of your interactions, including financial, period, to Facebook, which has introduced their much-anticipated Libra digital currency with a landmark white paper that's been long anticipated and came out today. Yes, as Zero Hedge's summary, after weeks of anticipation, the day has finally arrived, and in a dramatic push into uncharted waters for the socialist media behemoth that saw Mark Zuckerberg make overtures to his former arch-nemesis, there comes a time for the cabal to pull together. Facebook has finally published the white paper for its long-awaited stablecoin called Libra. No, they say it wouldn't be an exaggeration to claim that the white paper was the most hotly anticipated crypto white paper ever, made even more so by Facebook's extreme secrecy surrounding the project, which Zuck reportedly hopes will steer the company out of the morass of scandal and into the new and ever more profitable field of making money out of nothing. But it's important to note, Facebook will also be expanding into a major new business, payments, just as the FTC and DOJ initiate various antitrust investigations against Facebook and a handful of other Big Brother, Big Tech, cabal partner tech giants, and regulators on both sides of the Atlantic have already expressed, I hope you're sitting down for this one, folks, some concern. And here, folks, is where you have to pull up and really batten down the hatches on that suspension of disbelief thing. Per the white paper, Facebook's global stablecoin is called Libra, and it will operate on its own Libra blockchain, backed by a reserve of assets, probably meaning your data. But I'm getting cynical here, aren't I? Which technically makes it a stablecoin, kind of like something called Tether. And the coin will be governed by a non-profit consortium.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
The Libra Association, which evidently you can buy into if you're part of the club for only $10 million. And it will oversee the development of the Libra ecosystem from Switzerland. And per the FT, Facebook will spin off a unit called Calibra, which they say will be totally separate from to Facebook, in order to manage the Libra digital wallet offering, which will then be integrated into to Facebook's family of apps. And if you wonder what that means, just think, well, everything you're probably going to ever be allowed to access. To Facebook said the financial data gathered by Calibra wouldn't be shared.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Without users' consent. No, of course not. But just remember, in order to participate in the global blockchain economy, you'll have to take the mark. Give your electronic consent now, won't you? Some 28 partners, including Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, and a smattering of others, have all pledged to help build out the ecosystem, and they'll each kick in $10 million to start that Libra Association that will govern the coin and its so-called reserve assets. And according to The Guardian, the coin will facilitate payments across two Facebook's various platforms, including WhatsApp and Instagram, but you know there'll be more, as well as the new Libra Payments app. And it will be open source, according to Facebook, allowing developers to build out the ecosystem. And here even Zero Hedge waxes a bit cynical, suggesting it just might be incentivized with gifts of sensitive user data if you participate. And here I have to wax even a bit more cynical, folks, and suggest that if software developers find any problems in that open software system, they might find themselves banned from not only to Facebook, but all the infrastructure that they need to survive in the post-Libra world. And across the developed and developing worlds, to Facebook hopes that its app will help plug what they call the payments gap, created by 1.7 billion adults who don't have bank accounts. Fox Business summarizes some of that this way. To Facebook's new cryptocurrency platform could provide the embattled socialist media giant with a new stream of revenue of literally historic proportions, think Rothschild Empire, as it contends with a possible federal antitrust probe and continued scrutiny over its data privacy sick practices. And it'll be used for everything from person-to-person payments, traditional e-commerce, and spending on apps and gaming services on Facebook-owned properties. Here's how the white paper puts it, and I'll quote one line, and only one at this point, from the white paper itself. Libra's mission is to enable a simple, global, they don't put it in here, but I will, e-currency and financial infrastructure that empowers billions of people, unquote. And in the process, of course, allows us to monitor, influence, and yes, control all of them. And since it's true that they've already signed up Visa as one of their public-private partners, I guess it's fair to say they'll probably have a motto that sounds something like this. Libra, it's everywhere you'll ever be allowed to be. And given that they're already hell-bent on controlling your speech and even thought patterns, what could possibly go wrong? With that, I turn to a piece from Tom Luongo, also courtesy of Zero Hedge, about what he calls Facebook's crypto Trojan rabbit, explaining that in addition to the obvious goal of complete and total control, Libra is another attempt by the current banking establishment to slow the flow of hard money, meaning real gold and real silver, into the world economy. I'd put that a bit differently, folks, and say that as the acceleration out of collapsing fiat worldwide continues, this is an attempt to staunch the bleeding before it really gets started and say, hey, you don't actually want those old-fashioned things like gold and silver, do you? Wouldn't you rather have yet another wonderful new fake? But this one's high-tech. In this respect, he writes, Libra is no different than Ripple or other dollar-settled Bitcoin futures contracts. They're projects and products designed to slow the exodus out of the shadow banking system. Ripple is a way to lower foreign exchange fees, and off-chain futures settlement is a way to control Bitcoin prices and exacerbate volatility to slow crypto adoption by the, well, the rest of us, folks, the ones they call the normies. And here he notes that Caitlin Long of the Mises organization, in her excellent Forbes article, points out that Libra will get a whole bunch of major financial players backing it with the goal to become the standard creator in the vein of the Dow Jones Committee or the IMF, since they will determine the basket weighting of Libra itself. It won't, however, be a cryptocurrency, says Luongo, in the traditional sense. It won't have a limited supply, defined inflation rate, or any other commodity character whatsoever. And when it comes to the Bitcoin claim of proof of work, a.k.a. mining, pshaw! Every good Friedmanite knows that opportunity cost in creating new monetary units is simply wasted capital. And only open-mouth breathing rubes stuck in the 19th century think that's important. Instead, and here it comes, folks, Libra's supply will be regulated just like every other fiat currency. Yeah, whoever gets to print it decides how much to print. In other words, a central authority. Facebook already, he says, wants all your data, whether you're an account holder or not, and now, simply put, they want to control your currency as well. Call it the central bank of Facebook, Luongo does. And when you examine how they're marketing it, this is clearly, or at least he says it looks for all the world, like Facebook's application into the cartel of price-setting central banksters. At this point, he quotes Caitlin Long in her Forbes article, noting that she makes at least six important points about Libra and the fact that it could be a force for good. We'll come back to that in a second. Facebook's cryptocurrency, she writes, will be a powerful force for good in developing countries, which is where Facebook intends to market the product, well, at least first. Why? Well, because central banks in developing countries are notorious for their lack of discipline in maintaining the value of their fiat currencies, which too often lose purchasing power. See Zimbabwe, Venezuela, etc., etc. And yes, Luongo agrees, governments are terrible at managing the value of their fiat currencies for all the reasons Austrian economists, like the Mises Institute, have laid out in painstaking detail for decades. Which leads him to make one good point. I'll add one to it. The obvious conclusion? Facebook and the Wall Street banks, which actually control it, are creating a coin to do away with national currencies in the countries most vulnerable to the Fed's control over the global monetary system. It's the obvious next step in their quest to create a world currency. And if the current world fiat system is threatened by, oh, I don't know, says Luongo, maybe the implosion of a bunch of banks like Deutsche Bank, sparking a global sovereign debt crisis, then a so-called stable coin like Libra to replace the discredited dollar, euro, yen, pound makes some kind of perverse sense. And if the plan has always been, as Jim Rickards has been saying for years, that the response to a collapsing monetary system would be national currencies replaced by IMF SDRs as the reserves of a banking system, upon which foundation you build a trackable blockchain, like this new Libra, then having a cryptocurrency Trojan horse as a bait and switch has been part of the plan to maintain confidence in those very institutions that fomented the crisis in the first place. And what better platform to do that with than Orwell's Panopticon itself to Facebook? And it's here I interject my own observation when it comes to this idea of starting out really, really good. Zuckerberg, at least, knows how that should work. You offer something, perhaps even free, that really looks like a great value and provides some real utility. Let people talk with their friends. Get them suckered into it. Build a huge growth platform. And only then do they begin to figure out, just like flies being trapped in honey, maybe there were some not-so-obvious strings attached all along. And what at least at first glance looked like it was free was really a lot more expensive than you could have possibly ever believed. And this next point buttresses that argument as well. Said Luongo, as I pointed out before, Bitcoin was needed to replace all of the Ponzi schemes masquerading as money from the various fiat currencies of the world. Bitcoin was born out of the extreme fraud of the financial system, he writes, under Greenspan and Bernanke. They used leverage, ratcheted up post Y2K to levels which could only be supported through legislative fiat to wall off capital fleeing the system. And the response was a group of folks that applied the teachings of Austrian economics and Ludwig von Mises' regression theorem to create a digital asset which became more resistant to fraud the more it was adopted. The result was Bitcoin. It was, as he put it, a catastrophic mutation, a thing born out of necessity to free human beings from a central issuing authority of new monetary units. That relationship needs to be broken, he said then, if we're going to free ourselves from the cycle of tyranny of the few at the expense of the many. In other words, government ineptitude and or fundamental evil created Bitcoin, which was Ms. Long's point in a recent Mises Weekend talk entitled, Will Blockchain Free Us from Wall Street?, which focused on the domestic reasons why the dollar is yet to collapse and why Bitcoin provides a framework in which we could craft money that isn't controlled by a central issuing authority. An end, as he put it, to the counterfeiting of kings we've experienced in the past, which is where the battle lines are being drawn with Libra. Facebook and Wall Street, he says, are banking on two Facebook's pervasiveness to drive mass adoption and build an adjunct to the existing financial system which slows the growth of the real cryptocurrency marketplace. The trouble is, he says, they value blockchain to lower costs and replace antiquated clearing systems of increasingly opaque ledgers, as Ms. Long points out, but they still want to retain control over the value of the money itself, or at least what now passes for it, and what that money represents. They want to retain the system of perverse incentives that they've created, which rolls up the wealth of the world to them. And let's not forget, folks, blockchain not only gives them control, but the ability to track every single transaction in the blockchain as well. Which leads to Ms. Long's conclusion in her Forbes piece, where she says and believes that Facebook's cryptocurrency will turn out in the end to be a Trojan horse that actually benefits Bitcoin. As we witness a fundamental shift away from public-issued money as a trusted medium of exchange. Says Luongo, if folks like Martin Armstrong are correct when he wrote that we're approaching the end of a mega-cycle in public trust and a massive shift in consciousness to private assets as stores of wealth, well then, again, it makes sense for the powers that be to try to create a private, in-name-only cryptocurrency to co-opt that shift and remain in control. But the trouble, he says, is that it also means those same people who fed at this trough for so long aren't any more capable of managing that successfully than they were the dollar and the euro. Well, here I pause and part company just a bit with Tom Luongo, folks. When it comes to success, they basically own who knows how many trillions worth of the world's assets at this point and control most of its governments. Isn't that at least success in the sense that they were up front looking for? And here's another, I would say, at least somewhat questionable argument. As Bloomberg points out, he says, whether Libra will be used in commerce is very much in question. For the last decade, multiple cryptocurrencies, starting with Bitcoin, have tried and failed, so far anyway, to penetrate coffee shops and retail stores. And in the first 4 months of this year, only 1.3% of Bitcoin's economic transactions, and they can track them all so they know, came from merchants, according to researcher Chain Analysis, Inc., while the rest was trading. Now here's where I have to throw in literally the devil's advocate argument. How many of those coffee shops and retail stores have Facebook pages, folks? And don't really care whether their information is private or not. Joseph Lubin, co-creator of the Ethereum blockchain coin, said the following, while Libra might be a big step in opening up a new wave of users to the benefits of asset-backed digital money, it comes with the risks of centralized pain points and vulnerabilities. Data silos enable incumbents to maintain pricing power and also come with the risk of, well, we knew this, right? Data breaches, privacy, and security issues, problems that many have already begun to associate with Facebook, unquote. And that's true. No doubt about it. Lots and lots and lots of problems with two Facebook. So I have to ask it as a question. Given what we've seen when it comes to the stupidity of so many of the masses today, and it's being cultivated and growing, and they're bringing more in every single day, not only to suck at that same public teat, but convert the United States into one of those third world countries that two Facebook is evidently targeting here, Will sound money, honesty, integrity, old-fashioned concepts like privacy, free speech, and the rule of law win out in the long term over the Trojan horse? Or will a dumbed-down American populace simply go with what's easy, what they've already gotten used to, and what they're being pushed into anyway? And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.